The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. This program is devoted to wellness, environmental wellness, mind wellness, body politic wellness, everything that can enhance the quality of our lives on this planet, individually and collectively. Today, I'll be sharing insights into all those, a commentary. Every day, we will have a commentary. I believe it's important at this point to continue to remind people over and over again of how the individual in society today, working with others, is no longer considered essential, except for spending money. Chris Hedges, The Corporate State Wins Again, from TruthDig.com. In a few moments, Martha Rosenberg, How Big Pharma's Deceptive Advertising Helps Addict Patients Screw Over Doctors and Jack Up Insurance Rates, from Alternet. And on both of those, that's going to be our issue. Please feel free to call in. I'll give you our 888 number shortly and address those issues in whatever way you choose. The latest on health and healing and a little newsmaker call to action will be speaking with Daryl Rogers. He is the communications director for Alliance for Natural Health USA. They're at the forefront for spearheading amendments to the Senate Bill 510 safety bill, food safety bill, which ultimately wants, we all want it to be defeated. And we're going to talk about what they're doing with this Leahy bill. It's back, and it's not good, so we'll tell you what to do to protect your freedoms. Let's begin with the latest on health and healing. There's a nutrient I'm hopeful that all of you are taking. It's called resveratrol, and it does a lot of good in the body, not the least of which it helps your immune system. So for those of you who have a compromised immune system for any reason, good to have it. Generally, at the low end, 50 milligrams, the high end, 300 milligrams. This is just the latest from the British Journal of Nutrition, and they're suggesting something as little as 10 milligrams of resveratrol could reduce insulin resistance type 2 diabetes. So that's very important when you consider how many hundreds of millions of people worldwide suffer from diabetes. And that would be very inexpensive to use to help people. So here's what it says, quote, whether resveratrol becomes a useful tool in combating type 2 diabetes is difficult to tell, although the fact that recent studies, including the present one, have demonstrated that the efficacy of resveratrol at very low doses might increase the possibility for its medicinal application, unquote. So that means that resveratrol is non-toxic. And by the way, it's a very powerful antifungal nutrient. I suggest it all the time for people who have yeast infections and for people who may have urinary tract infections. Certainly anyone who has thrush, all the people who have AIDS-defining illnesses who I counsel, and that's a lot, I have them taking very high doses of resveratrol along with quercetin and bitter melon extract in order to kill off all the yeast and the fungi in their body. So anyone with yeast infections, resveratrol. Now, if you're diabetic or pre-diabetic, resveratrol as well. Last week, I mentioned four separate studies from four separate journals, all reporting that a woman who is pregnant and exposed to any number of pollutants, that will directly adversely affect the development of the fetus and hence have a child that will not be as healthy or as bright as they could be because of these environmental problems. This is the latest from Columbia University School of Public Health. Prenatal exposure to common insecticide linked to decreases in cognitive function at age 7. Now, this is just the latest in this, and this was on the online environmental health perspectives. What it means in lay language is this. Almost every city in America uses all forms of insecticides. And then they use fungicides. They weedicides. They want to get rid of the weeds around telephone poles in people's backyards, and people don't want weeds around their lawns. So instead of doing it the right way, by the way, the easiest way I've found is just to plant ryegrass. Ryegrass is terrific because it's going to be green most of the year in the wintertime. It gets brown in the summer, but then you put bahia down, so bahia is green in the summer, and therefore your grass can stay green all year round. But it's a great natural insecticide and a natural weedicide. You're going to have less weeds when you have ryegrass, and you're going to have less insects. And then if you just put some diatomaceous earth down, just get some diatomaceous earth and just spread it, and all kinds of little insects and larvae and spiders, it lances the body because it's prehistoric dust, and they dehydrate. And it's also good to get rid of ticks and fleas. All kinds of good things that you don't want, it gets rid of. But instead, people take the easy, quick route. Don't do it, because those insecticides stay around. They're in the air. You're pregnant, you breathe them, and then you have a loss of cognition by the age of 7 in your child, and you never know why. This is making that connection. Also, next up in the area of health, survey shows that for the first time, a majority of women shoppers are avoiding over-the-counter drugs. Instead, they're seeking natural alternatives. Now, this good news and this bad news. It's good news because it means, according to the Hartman Group on behalf of Boron, and they're looking at women 25 to 70, and they're seeing these women avoiding buying traditional over-the-counter medications for headaches and influenza. And instead, they're looking for homeopathic or naturopathic ways of dealing with things. They're looking for wild oregano oil, the very things we talk about all the time on this program. Now, I'll tell you why this is good. It's good because it shows you the majority of women, 25 to 75, are actually aware, and that's what's driving this interest, in not creating a toxic reaction within their body. They're far more conscious of the fact that they're being exploited and have been for a long time, no different than the women were exploited in the 1930s and 40s and 50s and 60s by cigarette companies. When you would see a full-page ad in the Journal of the American Medical Association with a doctor and stethoscope saying 47,000 doctors prefer Lucky Strikes for women to calm their nerves and soothe their throat. And unfortunately, my mother and a lot of other women believed that. They didn't believe the doctor would do anything that would harm them. Well, now women are aware that doctors will not intentionally do anything to harm you, but they're giving synthetic hormone replacement therapy. They're not challenging all these drugs. They become pill pushers. So they're taking it upon themselves. That's good. Here's the bad part. This is the most powerful, wealthiest industry in America. It dwarfs the oil cartel, the nuclear cartel. It has enormous power. They're going to push back. Mark my words, within the next 12 months, you'll start seeing a series of articles how it's very dangerous for you, the public, to try to self-medicate, that there are drugs out there that will prevent your cholesterol from getting high, statin drugs, that will protect you from osteoporosis, that will protect you from bipolar. Of course, all these will be lies, but for those who are not initiated into the politics of health and medicine, it may be enough to get them not to continue making healthy choices. So it's a good, bad battle that's going on. And finally, milk thistle promotes a healthy liver and fights cancer. What we've known from dozens of studies at Somerian was good as a strong anti-inflammatory, especially for women and men who may have had hepatitis, or a fatty liver, or sclerosis of the liver. But now, This is the latest study that shows that it also helps kidney function in detoxifying the body, and without proper detoxification and the care of those organs, the liver and the kidneys, you end up with an overload of toxins, and then you're not going to be able to function properly, and then your systems begin to shut down. So when you're taking milk thistle, it has the ability to support a healthy liver, healthy function of the kidneys, and it has been known since the first century AD. And the active ingredient in milk thistle, silmarin, S-I-L-Y-M-A-R-I-N, and it also has very high antioxidant properties. And there's a whole group of flavonoids that come with silmarin, and that indicates that it helps repair and protect liver cells from toxic substances. So anyone who's taking alcohol in any amount should be taking silmarin also. And if you already have cirrhosis of the liver, then you definitely need it. But now there's news reports showing that it also lowers your cholesterol, reduces insulin resistance and type 2 diabetes, and reduces the size of cancer's tumors and the growth of cancer cells, and reducing liver damage from chemotherapy treatment. So it's just a superstar on all levels. I'm Gary Noll, back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you listening around the world, and I just want to emphasize that unlike most programs that broadcast principally on a land-based or what we call terrestrial station on KPFK in Los Angeles for 20, going on 26 years now, 6 hours every Wednesday morning, and other stations all over America, we are also heard all over the Internet, and shortly, within the next few weeks, we'll also be broadcasting from our brand new studio that we are just finishing constructing in New York with 6 cameras, all satellite and internet. You'll be able to, if you have satellite, you'll be able to get us, and also through the internet, and you'll be able to see the guests. It's really nice what we're hooking up. It'll literally be up there the same quality as a CNN. We've been working on it for some time. But we have a lot of people, over half this audience are listening over other parts of the world, not just in North America. We have in studio Jason and Elizabeth, and before we go to them, I'm going to do the first of our two issues. Then I'd like for you to call in and share your thoughts. The first is from Martha Rosenberg, and this is so typical. And by the way, I'm filming on this right now, a major documentary. Here's what she says. Can anyone remember life before Ask Your Doctor ads on television? Flash forward till today, when direct-to-consumer drug advertising is on websites, online drug sales, and everywhere you look, someone is selling you something. The direct-to-consumer web perfect storm didn't just sell drugs like Claritin, Prozac, and the purple pill. It sold the diseases to go with them, like seasonal allergies, GERD, and depression. It sold risks of diseases like heart events, for which you'd take a statin like Lipitor, osteoporosis, for which you'd take a bone drug like Boniva, and asthma attacks, for which you'd use a second asthma drug like Advair. Of course, by the very definition of prevention, you didn't know if the drugs were working, but you weren't paying out of pocket anyway, so what the heck. Thanks to the direct-to-consumer advertising, people started taking seizure drugs like Tupamax and Lyrica for everyday aches and pains and headaches, and antipsychotics, hello, for everyday blues and mood problems. People started taking them. They started taking monoclonal antibodies made from genetically engineered hamster cells like Humira that invite cancer and cause superinfections and cause tuberculosis when they didn't have to. And the FDA mandated risk disclosures. So, yeah, now you know that with that medication, you're going to end up with brain bleeds, sudden death, difficulty breathing, stomach bleeding, liver failure, kidney failure, muscle breakdown, fainting, hallucinations, perversely increased, all these other conditions in the body. Why? Because they had to make more money. It's that simple. In effect, people were chemically experimenting on themselves. Soon anxiety graduated to depression, which graduated to bipolar disorder. Children got schizophrenia and depression like adults now, and adults got ADHD and ADD like kids now. And it didn't stop there. If the depression you or your kid had didn't go away, maybe it was because, it wasn't depression in the first place, but a thing called life. You needed to add a drug like Abilify or Seroquel onto the original drugs because your depression was, quote, treatment resistant. Now, of course, if people were paying for the drugs out of their pocket and you told them to add a drug that costs $500 a month because the first one isn't working, they would say the only thing treatment resistance is a sales pitch. Go find another sucker. But if third-party payers get stuck with the bill, no one seems to mind pharma's double and triple, quadruple money plan. In fact, psychiatric drug cocktails of 8, 10, and 12 different drugs, all to the same person on a daily basis, are now common medical practice for treatment-resistant depression or post-traumatic stress disorder, even though the drugs have never been tested when taken together. They're still sold. Pharma also adds an urgency pitch to the sale in case you think you can wait to take you or your child's treatment-resistant drug cocktails until symptoms worsen. Depression is now a progressive disease, say pharma paid doctors, after being known for decades as a self-limiting condition. And don't think kids will outgrow their mood problems either, says pharma. The erratic behavior is no doubt early mental illness that will only become worse if you don't treat it in the bud and keep treating it forever. Even mothers of one-year-olds with sniffles are told serious asthma is just around the corner if they don't treat their toddler now. Pharma is also having a field day with sleep because everybody is in the demographic. In fact, comedian Chris Rock riffs about hearing a direct-to-consumer ad that asks, do you fall asleep at night and wake up in the morning? And recognizes himself, yeah, I got that also. Not falling asleep soon enough, of course, is the disease of insomnia, which we have strains like middle of the night or terminal insomnia. But it also sets you up for what the pharma euphemism, wakefulness problems the next day. And once you're used to wakefulness, then you need an aid like Adderall. And what do you get? Well, you got problems. Because the pharma paid doctors and PR firms and industry subsidized medical journals and websites like WebMD, pharma is able to create new diseases, osteopenia and the risk of osteoporosis, perimenopause, and low T humanize others by giving them nicknames. And all these nicknames are just nonsense. But a more insidious cell are pharma-subsidized patient groups that lobby FDA and state agencies about expensive drugs, often psychiatric. And while these so-called patients often are flown by pharmacy industry reps to testify at FDA hearings, they pretend that they can't get needed drugs like terminal cancer patients. The issue is seldom availability, but money. Either they want a new use covered by insurers or don't want an older, cheaper drug substituted. The same patients appear on websites, testimonials, and phony grassroots PSAs about the epidemic of depression or childhood mental illness. How can you tell they're not the real patients, but pharma plans? You can't. And one last thing on this. I'm now seeing an awful lot of the pro-pharmaceutical people behind so-called front a concern groups with autism. I'd be very careful about which autism groups you support, because you do not know, unless you do your homework, are these really front groups for pharmaceutical companies who have no ability to treat autism spectrum disorder at all, and instead want to make sure that more money is going into their pockets. So we're overdiagnosed. You're given drugs you don't need. You're given diseases that do not exist, made up, like social anxiety disorder, math defiance disorder, parental defiance disorder, or shyness disorder. So if you don't speak up for yourself, you got a mental illness. If you speak up too strongly, you got a mental illness. If you don't want to obey authority, you really got a mental illness. And if you're completely obedient to authority, you got a mental illness. Well, we never had this before. And now people actually feel somehow that something's wrong with them if they're not walking around taking a lot of different meds, including children and teenagers. Your thoughts, our number to call to share your point of view, 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Our second one will come in about 10 minutes. No guest on today's show because of the extended number of guests we had last week. I wanted to have a few days where we have more time for you to call in and share your points of view. Now, while you're thinking about what to say and sharing your points of view on this issue, we have one more issue to come. Let's go over and say hello to Jason and Elizabeth. They're in the studio in New York City. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Gary. How are you today?
And Elizabeth.
Hi, Gary. Hi. Gary, welcome back to the USA. You're in California today. How was your trip to Japan?
Let's not talk about any of that. Let's go to your issue.
Okay. We've received over 1,100 responses to the show last Thursday, and people are expressing that it was the best show they have heard, and in fact, the best show they've heard on the air, and are keen to know what you'll be doing as a follow-up.
We have filmed extensively a whole group of people on genetic engineering. And we are now in the final stages. In fact, I believe, Jason, it should start today, should it not, the new website on Progressive Radio Network?
Hopefully it'll be up by the end of the day. If we get all the glitches out, it should be ready.
Okay, then what we're going to do, we're going to take a series of interviews on a specific topic. Let's say the topic is genetic engineering. And we might have 30 different world experts that we filmed all over the world. We would then have their entire clip, their entire interview, versus, let's say, a 1.5-2 minute piece that would go into a documentary. Because a documentary, you generally film about 40, 45 people, and you get an hour and a half documentary. So you can't give any one person too much, but when you're filming each of those people go into the documentary, the rest of that footage is not used. Now we're going to have all of the best of those extended interviews with B-roll, background footage. So you'll be able to go up and watch everything on that topic. Let's say that it's on vaccines. We just finished filming 5 experts on vaccines that have not come forward in the past. You haven't seen them anywhere. But they were so outraged by the people who are now promoting vaccines and condemning the anti-vaccine groups that they came forward. They are all with impeccable credentials. I filmed each one. So there'll be a whole week with the whole theme is vaccine. It'll be about 7 hours, 8 hours. So that's what we're doing. And Dr. Shiva is one of those individuals. Smith is one. We'll have all the people that you've heard on the shows even more in depth. Okay? Hello?
Hi, yes.
I have a question as well, Gary.
Yes.
So Earl from West Virginia wrote, Gary, I know you're a native of West Virginia, and along with Jerry West, Hot Rod Hudley, and Pearl Beck, you're one of the favorites. I live not too far from you and want to challenge your history. I've never heard you discuss Point Pleasant or the existence of the Mothman. What is your perspective on this?
Okay. Well, I could add in Sam Huff, the astronaut. Pearl Buck, by the way, I knew. Point Pleasant's not too far from where I grew up in. It's down in Mason County. And most people in West Virginia have heard about the Mothman. Mm-hmm. The difference is I don't see anything extraterrestrial. I don't see anything that many people to this day believe actually happened. You got to go back to 1966. It happened between 1966 and 1967. Some people believe that it was because a chief Cornstalk, who was back in the, he was chief of the Indians that lived right there in Point Pleasant, where all this happened back in the, I think, 1774-75, where he was a great warrior and led a great battle, and later then he was killed. They believe it's his curse. I believe that's nonsense. I believe what happened was there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of sightings. So it's not a matter did people see something. Yes, they did. Police saw it. Pilots saw it. People who generally are very credible saw this. But then they believe that it was a human being, 6-7 feet high with big, gigantic red eyes. And though it never attacked anyone, it would fly over a car. It would end up on someone's porch, and they believed this was a premonition of something to happen, or it was a bearer of bad tidings. None of that is actually the case. Here's what I believe actually happened, and here's where this whole fantasy is. Have you ever heard of a sandhill crane?
Mm-hmm.
It's a big bird. It's easily can go with an 80-inch a wingspan, and it can get about 3.5, even 4 feet. And we have over 12 million species on the planet. Only 1.2 million have ever been completely identified. In fact, there are several that we thought were absolutely extinct. The pterosaur, and there was a legend about the great Thunderbird. The Thunderbird was supposed to be a messianic bird. You had sightings in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas. You had them in France. You've had sightings of things people didn't know what they were. And then, lo and behold, a fish that was supposed to have been dead for millions of years showed up, and then showed up again and again and again. So now we know, all right, gee whiz, we thought some things died out a long time ago. It didn't. And then people thought it was UFOs. Hmm. It wasn't. Here's what it was. By the way, it also showed up in Parkersburg, my hometown, in November 1966. You had a plant, and the plant was down in Point Pleasant, and it was an old plant that the government had built to make munitions. In fact, that's where they made TNT, dynamite. And then it was closed, and the plants were made right on a pond, a rather large pond. I'm going to say it's about 5-6 acre pond. And no one did anything with this, but it began to leak. And every single report showed that they had defective fish and wildlife all around there. So dangerous was it that people were told, don't go fishing in there. Stay away from this area. Airborne particulate matter was measured, and there were very high levels of volatile toxic chemicals. This didn't happen over a day or so. It happened over several years. And yet, nothing was done about it. And it is my opinion that when you combine the sandhill crane that you can find there eating fish, and many of the fishermen will tell you when they took some fish out, they were deformed. They were like a frankenfish. If that crane was eating that fish, it could have caused distortions in its body. And by the way, the face of that has big red patch over it. So someone looking at it would have thought, gee whiz, that's a red eye. It's not a red eye. It's the color of the bird. And then what else except a bird could go straight up in the air and fly very fast over but never attacked anyone. And so that's what I believe it was. And then you had the big bridge collapse, the Point Pleasant Bridge collapsed, and I think 46 people died. And they said, oh, you know, that was the reason. No, the reason was it was an old bridge, and they had multiple stress fractures, and they had known about this bridge being in bad repair for a long time, but no one ever did anything about it, and that's what happened. So most people in West Virginia know about that, but they still think that somehow there's this human bird, and it's not. It's just a bird that was genetically defect. All right.
Excellent. Thank you, Gary. I also have one more thing that I'd love to read to you about our recent numbers. at the Progressive Radio here, we've got a great thing going here with our Progressive Revolution. Just like in Wisconsin and in the Middle East, there is one progressive movement going on big time here at Progressive Radio Network. We are seeing our audience grow weekly, especially with young adults and teens. Last week alone, we went up 16% in our listenership, which was after the previous week, which we went up 7%. We have some great new shows that we've added that hopefully are bringing the people here, and I'd just like to give a few of the names so people can go find them. First off, we have on Thursday nights at 8 o'clock, Cheater and the Rude, a new political comedy show with Jeff and Lee. We also have on Saturday afternoons at noon, a new show with Allison Rose Levy, a Huffington Post correspondent called Connecting the Dots. Great new show.
Well, one second. I don't want to go into all this now. What about that young woman who is going to be doing a program for teens combining music but also social commentary?
That's my next one, Michelle Trachtenberger. She's from the famous Trachtenberg Family Slideshow, and she's debuting in 2 weeks on May 11th, 2011, and she'll be joining us.
Well, we want to take some calls. Thank you. It's nice to know that people are listening and continuing to grow, and I want to thank them for doing that. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Stay in studio, Elizabeth. We'll come to you in a moment, but let's go over and say hello to Mike from New Jersey. Mike, you're on.
Hey, Gary. I'm calling about the drugging of our children. I just want to relay a couple of quick stories to you. I'm raising two boys. They're 10 years apart, and they're both still in school, and both of them have been recommended by their teachers to take some kind of drugs or medication to help their behavior. Now, first of all, who are these teachers to recommend these? Are they experts in drugging our children or not? What do they profit from it? The other thing is, I have a friend who's been a teacher for years and years and years, and I've had discussions and arguments with her, and she feels that it makes her job easier when certain kids that are bouncing off the walls, in her terms, are put on these drugs. So you're taking what is normal young boy behavior, and you're drugging their young experiences out of them. And
hello. Oh, I think we just got disconnected. Sorry, Jeff. We just lost your mic. We just lost your call. I think I know where you're going with this, and I'll be happy to address it. First, if today's standards of saying that you have to sit still, you have to pay full attention or you'll be drugged, my entire generation would have been on drugs. All right, we had all been suffering from some so-called ADD or ADHD. But fortunately, there were no drugs to treat the condition, and therefore they didn't have to make up the condition in which to profit from it. So my generation got a pass. Unfortunately, not true with today's. You are correct. There is no teacher who has the diagnostic capacity to determine that a student has any form of brain chemical imbalance, because there is no such study in all of medicine, let alone psychiatry. And I will prove that to the world when you see 30 separate psychiatrists who were being filmed ask on the streets just before they went into the American Psychiatric Association meeting. They were asked, not only from here, but all over the world, is there any such thing as a brain chemical imbalance? No. Can you test for any such thing? No. Then how do you know that something is called something? Why is something called something and treated? Well, we're guessing. So it's all guessing. There's no science behind psychiatry at all when it comes to trying to rebalance brain chemistry chemically. Separately, we've taken students and improved their diet, gotten rid of the caffeine in the morning, the refined carbohydrates, the sugar, and lo and behold, with some B-complex folic acid, the kids just straighten out. Give some niacin to those who tend to be more rambunctious, and you get a really good focus. And we just finished doing that at a charter school in Newark, where a lot of the Verna Gray, the head of the school, said, we have had an enormous difference in children's behavior of being more focused, more energized in a positive way when they got rid of the sugars and refined carbohydrates or caffeine. Next, how many children may have been suffering from some form of aluminum or mercury toxicity to the neurons in the brain? Since children rarely are tested for heavy metals, you wouldn't know that a child could be acting out because they have an overbody burden of heavy metals, which directly impact neurons and hence direct impact behavior. By chelating them, getting the heavy metals out, another way of helping a child to get back to a normal biochemistry. But then you have to deal with the idea of what in a classroom can possibly compete today with the excitement, the variability, and the interpersonal dialoguing that occurs outside the classroom. So you're asking a teacher unfairly to be as interesting, exciting, and dynamic as what they have to compete against. There was a time when you had recess, you had games, but you didn't have the constant internet games. You didn't have the war games. You didn't have all this, the crash games. You have that today. So a classroom, by comparison, seems a boring place to be, even with outstanding teachers. And then you have the schools being reimbursed, actually given a financial incentive, upwards of $1,500 or so for each child that's put on these meds. So there is a financial incentive, no different than having a cola machine in a school. That's not there for free. The people that are putting that cola in the school end up paying the school a hefty amount of money, and the schools take that, knowing full well it's going to cause a lot of kids to bounce off the walls. And then when does a child have a chance to be a child? I took a kid that was diagnosed with ADD, who was on Ritalin, and was gaining weight, and I asked a simple question. Do you have trouble in all of your classes? Oh, no. Are there some teachers you like better than others? Some things you can focus on? Are there things you can do at home where you focus? The answer was yes. Well, clearly then the kid didn't have ADD because it can't be episodic. You have it all the time, 24/7. But if you have it only in this class, then maybe it's the teacher. Maybe it's how it's being taught. It's maybe not liking a teacher. So we have tried to rubber stamp one size diagnosis fits all, and that is the tragedy. I would never allow, never, let me repeat that, I would never allow my child to be diagnosed and treated by any medication in any school under any conditions, period. I think it's a gross disservice to the children and the parents. And thank you for calling and sharing your point of view. I appreciate it, Mike, even though we lost your call there. Jeff from New Jersey. You're on, Jeff.
Hello, Gary.
Yes, hi.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my call. I found out about 15 years ago that I had hepatitis C. And I found out through some routine blood work for some foot surgery. And I did some searching back, and I found that when I had my appendix out about 40 years ago, I had gotten an abscess and I had a blood transfusion. And at the time that I found out, back in the mid-90s, I worked with a gastroenterologist who did my genotype and did my workup and told me that the therapy probably wouldn't benefit me based on my genotype and my sex and my ethnicity and my weight. So I just put it on the back burner. Last year, I had my gallbladder out, and when I went for a follow-up, the doctor removed my gallbladder, told me that when he looked at my liver, it was very nodular, and he suggested that I see another gastroenterologist ASAP. So back in December, I started with a gastroenterologist who put me on pegylated interferon and ribavirin. And prior to that, I was taking milk thistle, and he told me not to take it when I'm taking the prescription drugs. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
It's very simple. All you have to do is look under the physician's desk reference for any medication that you're taking and then look to see what is contraindicated, what you should not take. And if it's contraindicated, then you shouldn't take it. But however, be aware that there are natural approaches to reversing hepatitis C, including intravenous ozone, and herbs and different juices that will reduce and eliminate that viral load. And my suggestion is that you start by reading up on the natural approaches to the way that you rebuild the liver naturally, not just antiviral, but completely rebuilding the liver. The good news is, Jeff, is that 60% of the liver can be completely rebuilt, unlike the kidneys or the heart. You have a big advantage there. So start with that. Go up online, look under liver detoxification, because that's where you would start, and then look under rejuvenation of liver, and then get the individual therapies after that. All the best to you. In studio, let's go and say hello to Elizabeth. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Gary. Hello again. I have a question here from a lady called Lee Kwai, who is Vietnamese. She was born in 1980. Her family came to the USA in 1973, and her father was an officer in the army. They currently live in San Francisco. She and her many friends are really enjoying the show, which they became aware of about 6 months ago, she says. She works in helping people with AIDS in the community and those with immune deficiency conditions, and they really appreciate your work, as there have been an awful lot of people who have improved their health by following the protocols that you've laid out. And there's a large community of activists who are using and following your books and other materials and the up-to-date information you have on your website. This is Lee's question. All during college, and she went to Berkeley, while discussing Vietnam, people only knew that the USA were in there and should not have been in there, but no one understood why. Now, when she speaks with college kids, they have no idea about Vietnam, just that there was a war, and they really know nothing. She would like you to give your view, as she's very much appreciated your historical commentaries on the Russian Revolution, the massacres in the Ukraine, and the massacres in Armenia. What was the real reason why it occurred, and who was really behind it? She says that her father's never discussed it with her, as he lost everything. Her father's brother, who stayed in Vietnam, lost almost everything he owned, and had to go to a re-education school for 2.5 years, where he was indoctrinated, and this would have happened to her father if he had stayed.
Mm-hmm. The real tragedy of Vietnam... Of course, the first tragedy is you have over 2.5 million people who lost their lives, and 60,000 Americans plus several hundred thousand wounded, was that it didn't have to happen. That's the very first point I want to make. Up until that point, you had colonists around the world, and the French were some of the colonists who had power throughout the Indonesia. Then along came the Japanese, and they're the ones who took power at that point, but allowed the French to stay there, even to run their businesses, providing they paid a certain duty to the Japanese. In effect, they became a protectorate within the Japanese. But then in 1945 that the war was over, and then the British came in, and then the British gave the French full control. But in 1941, there was a man, and his name was Ho Chi Minh, and he created what was known as the League for the Independence of Vietnam. And the French actually acknowledged that Vietnam should be independent, that it should not be under colonial rule. And, in fact, it was March 1946 that this recognition actually occurred. And unfortunately, they didn't hold to that. America was invited by Ho Chi Minh to be partners. Ho Chi Minh said with the British and the United States and the French, let us work together. And they said no. They wouldn't do that. But it was Ho Chi Minh who actually came to the countries and asked if there could be peace. We said no, and there were four reasons why. The real reasons for the Vietnam War, and these are not going to be shown in any of the textbooks, but they were rubber, rice, opium, and oil. Because you had very rich oil banks and that had been discovered off the coast of South Vietnam and even up towards North Vietnam. But it was a big supplier of opium and enormous rubber factories that the French had had, and a major supplier of rice. So then the French decided that they would not recognize Vietnam and would not recognize any of these people. And there was big arguments. And so Ho Chi Minh was attacked, so he went to hide in the mountains. And he hid in the mountains for 8 years, and they couldn't find him. And during this period of time, there were an awful lot of people who were killed. The French killed a lot of people that the world has never recognized, about 100,000. And they didn't want to give up any control over any of their countries. But in 1953, Ho Chi Minh then came out of the mountains, and they controlled about two-thirds of Vietnam. And so the French thought, okay, we'll do something once and for all to stop this fella. After all, he has no airplanes. He has no tanks. He just has old rifles that they had been able to collect from the Second World War. And there was a very famous battle. It lasted 56 days. It was called Binh Binh Phu. And there is where the best and brightest generals of France went into this area. I think there were 15,000 French. They dropped in. They built a big airport, and they brought in hundreds of tanks and weapons, and they built a whole like little city there. And there was a man who had been a school teacher. His name was Jep, and he was then the General Jep, and he brought people from 600 miles away. Mind you, there were no roads. They literally had to build the roads, which were 600 miles to bring his supplies. And it took 3 months for them to build this road, chain of roads, and it was called the Ho Chi Minh Trail. So China and Russia gave lots of trucks then and arms to and bicycles. They gave thousands and tens of thousands of bicycles because that was the easiest way to get people to go. And then they gave them about 200 heavy guns. And by the way, some of those guns came from North Korea after the war that the Chinese had captured and then gave to General Jep. So now here are the French and all their arrogance and all their conceit, thinking nobody could beat them. They're on this gigantic plane. Well, gee whiz, it's like the Charge of the Light Brigade. The last place you want to be is on a plane. You want to be in the mountains surrounding the plane, because from the mountains you can shoot down the plane. When you're on the flat plane, you have no place to go. And that's exactly what happened. They dug tunnels. They put their troops in place, and then the siege began. And I think it was Pierre Langley, who was the one of the commanders. And they said, this isn't going to work, because just in the first night, the French lost 500 guys in the first couple of hours. And there was 10,000 killed in just the first month. And all the while, the French were getting help from President Eisenhower and John Foster Dulles. They wanted an anti-communist, and a pro-capitalist, anti-Russian, and anti-Chinese government. And therefore, they wouldn't support Ho Chi Minh. But mind you, Ho Chi Minh was friends with China and friends with Russia, but wanted independence. We made one of the worst political blunders in American history by not recognizing that he was a friend, not an enemy. So they thought it would be easy to destroy him. So Eisenhower was supporting 70% of all the French occupation of Vietnam. We were paying for, the United States taxpayer were paying for. Our weapons to the French were coming from the United States. It cost over $1 billion. And so in the end, Chou Enlai, the Prime Minister of China, and others met and said, what are we going to do about all this? And Dulles, the Americans, President Eisenhower's own top man, said, let's drop a nuclear bomb over Vietnam. Over North Vietnam, that'll destroy him. And they said, not the best idea. So finally, I think it was in May, the French surrendered, and 10,000 of them had died. It was one of the worst defeats in French history. No one knows the exact number of the Vietnamese that died, but it was a massive loss. And it ended in July of 1954, and then there was a split in Vietnam. The north was Ho Chi Minh, and the south was the American-supported one. And it wasn't too long after that that we went into full support, and that's what got us into Vietnam. Had there not been the enormous economic advantage, and had there not been all these neocon war hawks who saw endless war as being extremely profitable, we would not have been in Vietnam. Vietnam was completely preventable. The real history has never been told to the American public. I think they would find that that all those people who now say, oh, you know, we were right in Vietnam, we were wrong about everything we did in Vietnam, as we're wrong about everything we've done in Iraq, Libya, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. Hope that answers that question.
Right. Thank you very much.
Okay, let's say hello to Daryl Rogers, who's on standby here. Daryl is from the Alliance for Natural Health. Hi, Daryl. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Daryl, you've been a political affairs specialist in Washington, D.C. You know why this Senate bill is so bad. You know the people behind it who managed to get it passed. And yet, we thought we had a small victory when Representative Senator Patrick Leahy, Democrat of Vermont, introduced Senate Bill 3767, the Food Safety Accountability Act. I opposed it, in part because it established fines and imprisonment up to 10 years in prison if you introduce or delivery for introduction into interstate commerce any food that is adulterated or misbranded. So simple misbranding, something that could actually happen innocently, you could go to jail for 10 years. And we saw this as a way that the FDA could now virtually destroy all small people in the field. I'd like your take on this. I'd like to know where we stand and what we can do to stop this absolute terrible piece of legislation.
Sure. Well, I'll start off with the good news. Last year, we defeated that bill that said 10,000 that said 10 years in prison for misbranding or adulterating a drug. And as far as the FDA is concerned, you have misbranded your drug if you link on your website to factual information about the health benefits of your dietary supplement, your vitamin supplement, or your natural food. So we were up in arms over this last year. We opposed it. You opposed it. Your listeners, our members, and the Alliance for Natural Health, along with others, defeated that bill. The bill was reintroduced this year with improved language. There has to be an intent to harm and an intent to defraud. But unfortunately, the language is still very vague, particularly when it comes to the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. We want the language to be more accurate. The intentions of the bill are good. They want to go after the egg producers last year that caused a lot of harm and even deaths due to salmonella outbreaks. And we tried to work with Leahy's office to craft better language. They just thought that the clock was ticking away, and they wanted to introduce this bill. It unfortunately passed in the Senate with unanimous consent, but we are looking to work in the House to either kill the bill or improve the language to make sure that dietary supplements, vitamin supplements, and natural foods producers are excluded from some of the egregious interpretations that could be possible with the bill's language. So that is where we are at now.
All right, so what should people do?
We have an action alert on our website, the Alliance for Natural Health, USA.org or ANH-USA.org. Let your representatives know that you know about this bill, you're concerned about it, putting dietary and vitamin supplement manufacturers in prison, giving the FDA new authorities to target them. Let them know that you are concerned about this bill and you want our concerns, their concerns, addressed at ANH-USA.org. It's the first thing on our website.
Thank you. I appreciate you keeping us aware out there, Daryl.
Great, and thank you very much for having me.
Daryl Rogers, okay. On any of these pieces of legislation, almost never are we given an advance notice of it. And understand, we the people, are never, ever invited into the offices of representatives or senators to consult on a piece of legislation and never to write it. And yet every single day of the week and on the weekends, lobbyists for the special interest groups are in Washington meeting, either on location or off location, to write bills that protect them, deregulate them, and end up harming us. I'm going to do a series of programs exposing how laws are actually done, whether it's a food safety law or an environmental law, so that you can better understand how little control we have over our democracy. Tomorrow, I'll do... I didn't get to both commentaries. I'll get another one in. I want to take more and more calls from people in the audience. Never know where the questions are coming. I cannot answer because of my travel schedule now. I cannot answer emails personally or even phone calls. I'm traveling and filming and investigating virtually every day, all day. But you can go to Ask Gary at GaryNoll.com, and they'll read it, and they'll just select some as they do, and they put it on the air. I thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. And if you miss a program or want information, please go to our archives and download any show that you wish. We have some really outstanding programs coming up, including a brand new 5-part original in-depth investigative reporting series that I'm working on now called In the Name of Peace, Freedom, and Democracy. Yeah, the trouble is we don't do any of that. You'll see what I'm talking about when you hear the series. Have a nice day.
Turn a gray sky blue. You see, I can make it rain when I want to. Oh, I can build a castle from a single grain of sand. Yeah. You see, I can make a ship sail.
The Gary Noll Show is produced in our New York City studio. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. The chief archivist is Sharon Pride. And the program director is Jason Taubenfeld.
Hey, you're the key to my happiness, and I'm hanging next to you, hey. Woo! No. Hanging next to you. I've been traveling. Like the bird in the sky.